I tell you to be different and creative and think this way. A much used business cliche. Kayla.
What is outside the box?
You got it.
We're flying high with the wings and talking all things lacrosse. You're now listening to the Outside the Box podcast right here on Underground Sports Philadelphia. Welcome into episode number 280 of the allegedly award-nominated, honorably mentioned, number 9 NCAA-ranked, of course, viewable on YouTube, Outside the Box podcast, the official lacrosse podcast on the Underground Sports Philadelphia Podcast Network. It's KB coming to you from Columbus still, and it's Deej coming to you from the career. We got kind of a low load show this week. Obviously, World Games going on, so no PLL previews or pick-ems or anything like that, but we're going to recap everything that went down in Columbus. We'll talk a little World Games and anything else. That
World Championships.
On. Same thing.
They're not the same thing.
Eat me alive. I dare all of you. Do it. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Will you jump through the computer screen? I don't fucking think so. Bring it. I'll go fucking Thor on your asses and wield my hammer and sling it around all of you. The amount of exhaustion I'm dealing with right now is the most I've ever dealt with in my life. So if you have a problem with me slipping up, go fuck yourself. But yeah, I'm still in Columbus. And Deej is at the career. But before we get into everything, make sure you guys are following us at OTB Laxpod, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.com/UndergroundSportsPHI. You can follow Deej on Twitter at @SCS_NextGreat. You can follow me at KBIZZL311. Subscribe to the podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you decide to get your podcasts. We are there. Leave a 5-star rating and review. It goes a long way for helping more people find the show. Let's just keep doing cool stuff that we can bring to you. And, you know, it helps us take this thing to the next level. So go subscribe. And, of course, subscribe to the Underground Sports Philadelphia YouTube channel, youtube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia. That's where you get full video episodes of this show and every show on our network. You get clips, shorts, live streams, all that good stuff on our YouTube channel. youtube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia, and see, you can hear the yawns while I'm doing the rundown of all the business work there, because I am exhausted. But we're gonna get into this episode. Deej, what's popping?
I'm living the dream, man. I'm doing the career while doing what I love to do at the same time. I've been multi-screening multiple world championship games at once. Coach this week, like, I mean, life is great. Well, I don't know if anybody's catching all the sarcasm I'm throwing around right now, but I'm breathing, I'm alive, so I can't complain too much. Just excited to be watching a ton of lacrosse, man.
Yeah, I'm still in Columbus, as we noted before we got here. Little update for the people, too, on OTB Live. You know, we're still a small, independent operation. And with that comes bumps, bruises. And sometimes, you know, you get all your limbs broken and you look like Vecna came after you in Stranger Things. That's kind of what happened with OTB Live. Not that the episode didn't get off the ground running, because it did. It was recorded audio wise, but video wise, we kind of you know, after sifting through everything, there's no real good video from OTB Live from the Premier Zone. So if you were there, you got to witness some fun stuff. I'm still sick to my stomach about it. It has been like just one of those things where you wish you could have just paused time for a minute and rewinded, but the audio of OTB Live will be out when I get home from Columbus at some point, just because I have to kind of like sift through and listen to everything. It was a great show. Had two awesome guests. I don't know if we're going to spoil them here yet or not. I haven't determined. But there is no video.
Right.
Oh, yeah, three. You're right. Not sure if I'm going to spoil any of that yet, though. But the audio will be on the podcast. Sure. I'm still determining if I can find a way to just, like, get a good photo montage of stuff to overlay the audio. I know that doesn't play well on YouTube whatsoever. So let me know in the comment section of this episode if you want it on YouTube, if you guys listen on YouTube. I can see if I can make that work. But there is no actual video footage.
I said we could just drop the flyer promo on it. It'll just run as a still image.
We'll figure all that out. I do apologize, though, to everybody. The camera died about a quarter of the way into us recording when the battery said it was 100%, which is very annoying. Don't know how that happened. But you live and you learn, and it was kind of nice, a nice little healthy serving of humble pie that got shoved down the windpipe instead of the esophagus. We still have a lot of room to grow, and, you know, next time we do that, priority number one will be we have somebody manning the camera, because we need that. But let's get into recapping as a whole. Columbus, it's brought to you by our awesome merch partners, PHI Apparel Company. They're the best in the game. There's no doubt you guys are going to stand out in the crowd when you're rocking your OTB merch or any merch from PHI Apparel Company, because with their unique designs for all, you're a crowd pleaser. It's the most effective and direct way to support everything we're doing. So if you want to see us continue to do more dope stuff, go get your merch from PHI Apparel Company. Go to phiapparel.co and use code UNDERGROUND for 10% off any and all merch orders. We want to see you guys rocking OTB merch all summer long, you know, following along with the PLL. We want to see it year-round pretty much. So when you get your merch, tag us. We'll retweet it. We'll repost it on Instagram. So go get your merch, phiapparel.co, code UNDERGROUND for 10% off your order. Columbus is come and gone. We are in the bye weeks, if you will, of the PLL, the early season bye week. Columbus was a doozy. The fans showed out. The games were unreal. And we have a big shift in the standings after the first 3 weeks of play. And this is how the standings look after Columbus. It's the Chaos Lacrosse Club in first place at 2-1 with a score differential tiebreaker with 5, which we'll get into that when we recap that game. The Archers at 2-1 with a score differential of 3. Water Dogs at 2-1 with a score differential of 1. And Redwoods at 2-1 with a score differential of -5. And then we roll into the 1-2 squads. The Whip Snakes at 1-2 with a score differential of 5. Atlas at 1-2 with a -1 score differential. Cannons at 1-2 with a -3 score differential. And in last place, Chrome at 1-2 with a -5 score differential. First game, we talked about it on OTB Live because it happened right before the last game of the weekend. But Water Dogs come all the way back from being down 5-0 at half or at the end of the first quarter and win 19-18, carried on the back of Connor Kelly doing the damn thing. Scores a hat trick of 2-pointers and was named Player of the Week for good reason. Did the damn thing. The Water Dogs never quit, and I think that's been a big part of just their franchise, like, mantra is just, you know, never say die, because they are always trying to find themselves in it. No matter what time is left on the clock, whether it's game clock or shot clock, they are always willing themselves to a win. And to overcome a record-setting day at the stripe by Trevor Baptiste, who goes 31 of 36 for a new PLL record for faceoffs won, pretty damn gutsy performance by the Water Dogs.
I remember sitting in the press box, and the two of us were just looking at each other after every goal that Crum scored. And it was just, or sorry, not not Crum, Atlas. After every goal Atlas scored, it was like, wow, we really got this one wrong. And like, it looked like they couldn't be stopped. Like, Trevor was doing fantastic at the X. They were rolling on offense, everybody clicking, moving the ball, getting good shots off. And Jack and Cannon in the defense were giving up literally like no space to the offense, to the Water Dogs offense. So it looked like they were gonna finally grab, you know, their first win against the Water Dogs, and or their first win in a while against the Water Dogs. I think the only time they lost was in the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
To Atlas. So it looked like Atlas was kind of finally going to break that curse and get things done. And then all of a sudden it was like, boom, it was like the light switch came on for the Water Dogs, and they were all of a sudden themselves again. I wish there was, I had a, what's it called? A comparison in my head. Wow, my brain's like not working right now. I had a comparison in my head, but like I can't put it together right now. But basically they were like two different teams. It was like the lights came on and they were like, oh yeah, I'm, you know, Zach Currier who plays for the Water Dogs, so maybe I should act like it. And like,
it was the boom. Epitome of the video meme of the kid saying, they had us in the first half, I'm not gonna lie.
Literally. Like, they had us in the first quarter, I'm not gonna lie, but we're here now. Like, and the offense put it together, and it was one of those cases where it was truly like goal by goal. You know, like, you could tell the Water Dogs were looking at it like, hey, let's just take this one goal at a time. Like, we can't get more than two. Can't get more than 2 points on any goal. So let's just take this one shot. Let's say that one shot at a time, not just one goal, but one shot at a time. We're going to go, we're going to find our best shot. And when it goes in, we're going to celebrate and work it back one shot at a time. And that's what they did. You casually saw goal here, goal there, goal here, two-pointer here, goal here, two-pointer there. And then all of a sudden the game's tied and they're going back and forth. And you're like, whoa, where did this just come from? And that's the sneakiness of the parody of the PLL, is a team can be completely out of it and with a matter of minutes, they're right back into the game. Redwoods did the same thing later on, which we'll talk about in a bit, but they were down for a bit, and then all of a sudden, boom, they were right back into it.
Yeah, and I mean, Coach Pressler was not happy after the game whatsoever. So I think he set the record for most times that junior high play was ever said in a press conference. And I mean, rightfully so, when, you know, your team is up as much as Atlas was, and Trevor's doing his thing at the stripe, for you to lose that game, it's borderline, if not over the border, of embarrassing for your team. There's a lot of regrouping that Atlas has to do to get back to where they think they should be. But I think this was a humbling moment for that team where, you know, they're coming off beating the Whipsnakes for the first time in team history. And then all of a sudden, you know, you feel like you're in the driver's seat. You have this momentum going into another big weekend, and then you get absolutely, you know, torn apart, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts, pretty much, you know, because the way the Water Dogs stormed back, it was little by little, and they squeaked their way back, and then they finished the job right towards the end of the game. So kudos to Coach Copeland and the rest of the Water Dogs coaching staff for never letting the guys quit, and shout out to the guys for not quitting. but I think that was a gutsy win for the Water Dogs. It's a season-defining win for the Water Dogs, even this early in the year. That gives you momentum, you know, into this break, and it gives you optics of, like, we're never out of a game that, you know, seems out of reach.
Yeah, and I mean, it's tough to do that, especially at a high level, too. It just speaks to the mental capacity of lacrosse players, especially high-level lacrosse players, being able to forget the last play, forget the last goal, forget the last mistake, and say, I'm still good at this game. I'm still good enough to win this game, and I'm going to do it, you know, one thing at a time, and digging deep. Digging deep is tough. But also, they had somewhat of an advantage. They have one of the biggest crowds there this weekend. They had fans all over the place. They were loud. Some of them were right behind their bench, giving them a lot of energy. So it was an all-encompassing thing. Just the organization, air quotes, it's not quite the same sports organizations we're used to seeing in leagues, but the organization that is the Water Dogs, which includes their front office, coaches, fans, players, all came together this weekend to create an atmosphere that allowed them to continue to fight in a game that some people would have given up on.
Yeah, and Pac-Man Jones was in attendance this weekend as well, which was pretty sweet. Goes and talks about the PLL, drops a nod to Trevor on the Pat McAfee show, and just bringing the light of the PLL to the mainstream, which is pretty dope. I got to dap up Pac-Man as well this weekend, which was pretty wild. So it was pretty neat seeing Pac-Man Jones taking in some lacrosse and just enjoying himself and being the people's champ this weekend and being that celebrity guest that PLL tends to find every single week.
Yeah, I mean, that's also amazing. And, like, not even just him being there is one thing, and being involved, being down in the field, you know, hanging out with RJ and you know, the Rebels and that kind of thing. But the social aspect of it. He got on the PLO social. He was on Atlas's social. A ton of people were talking about him. And then he talked about it on his own social accounts. And then he went on to Pat McAfee the next week and raved about it for days. Not even just one day, his first day there. He talked about it again on Wednesday. And I think he talked about it a little bit on Thursday as well. Like, lacrosse is becoming a sport that everyone is involved in and wants to be involved in. And when you have high caliber athletes, celebrities, stars around the world that are involved and say that it's a good product, more people are amped to tune in. Like, you know, imagine, you know, LeBron James coming to a game and he's like, yo, like, I love lacrosse. I would play lacrosse if I could have. And you're going to get a ton more fans just because of who he is. And that's where the league is trending. They're constantly getting high caliber names sitting field side at their games, on their socials, promoting the league on their socials, going back out into the community and saying how well of a product it is. And that just is a testament to how much work has been put in by the players, the league, those celebrities themselves, people like us. Just the constant talk and rave about the league and the sport has pushed it to where it is now.
Yeah, 100%. And then the nightcap on Friday, it was Cannons and Chrome. Cannons pull the quote-unquote upset and get their first win since week one of 2022. Gutsy performance by them as well. It's back and forth. You know, the league kind of like moniker this year is, you know, calling it the blank game and filling in the blank, like the tough game, the strong game, the you know, future game, whatever it may be. This one I wanted to dub the Tide game because there were five different ties in this game throughout the duration of Chrome and Cannons. And, you know, I've been critical, especially last year, of Matt Cavanaugh on this podcast. I want to put it out there that when Matt Cavanaugh is doing what he did in that game, scoring that eventual game winner, and doing stuff like that, it's better for the league. It's better when Matt Cavanaugh is good and playing well, because you get fun shit like that, and you're talking about a Cannons team who is looking for an identity, and for Cav to be part of that is massive. For Cannons to go out there and, again, never quit, even when it seemed like, you know, things could have gotten out of hand, that's a gutsy win and a great first win for Coach Holman.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a fantastic game. That was my main thing. The entire game was fun. From watching Cannons get off to a nice start, Kavanaugh having a great game, Marcus Holman bringing the energy, and hearing fans be excited for the Cannon squad, to Chrome battling back a little bit, getting into the game, getting their offense ignited, and watching the back and forth battle that ensued for the rest of the game, and the electricity, the one goal win, and then just seeing the pure joy on the Holman's faces in the press conference afterward was probably the best part. Like, they were just happy, and they just enjoyed the experience of being out there. Like, and you could tell it was nice that they won the game, and they were excited that they got that first win, and like kind of the monkeys off their back, and they can look to build off what they did this weekend and get more wins. But they are just two people who are just excited to be around the game of lacrosse. Whether they win or lose, that doesn't really matter as much to them. They would love to win, but they still enjoy being around the game, coaching the game, playing the game, even when they lose. And to just see the joy of the work that they've put in for the first 4 weeks of this season, as it was nice. It was so pleasant to see that work out for them, and for them to experience that joy. And they're just so humble about it too. So it was just kind of the perfect place, like Marcus mentioned, like for him to have started his career in Ohio and got his first win in Ohio, and then to come here with Cannons and get his first win as a Cannon with his dad, his dad's first PLO win in Ohio, was just like a full circle. Yeah, on Father's Day weekend, it was just like a full circle encompassing experience for the both of them.
And I think Cannons caught Chrome at the perfect time, because I think Chrome, it was obvious missing Jesse Bernhardt was an unfortunate, you know, for them on the field. Obviously, he was away for paternity leave. But that was an obvious, you know, hole in the defense that Chrome were missing. And, you know, some of the rookies got a little bit. Not that they played horribly, but you could tell at some moments during the game that, oh, there's a rookie out there and not, you know, savvy veteran team captain Jesse Bernhardt.
Yeah, it was interesting how well they held up, in my opinion, to not having him there. It parallels in comparison to me with Eddie Glazner going down last year, and kind of how well the Woods defense played, even in the playoff, even though they didn't win their playoff game, they played well with Finn Sullivan filling that role. It's very reminiscent of that, where, what did they do? Who filled that spot? They dropped someone down, right?
Chrome, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the kid they drafted this year.
Wow, why am I blanking so bad? That's awful. Because I'm sure I know this kid's name, too. That's the worst part. Troy Hedinger played LSM. He played LSM, but I can't remember who they had play close with Manley and JT. It was Nick Grill.
Yeah.
Nick Grill did fine. He's not Jesse Bernhardt, but he did fine. He very much did exactly what Finn Sullivan did last year for the Woods. And it's like, that's what you want to see from your team. And I don't necessarily think there's too much of a drop off there, other than the presence that Bernhardt brings to the game. Much like what you saw with Eddie Glazner. There wasn't much of a skill drop-off between Eddie and Finn. but the presence that Eddie brings to the game and to the Redwoods defense is calming, and everybody knows what to do. They feel like everything's under control. Chrome is the same way with Bernhardt. They were able to handle most of that, but you saw kind of some frantic moments, and you saw them kind of look lost at times. And kudos to Cannons for taking advantage of those opportunities. That's the biggest thing, is those happen in every game, even with experienced defenses, but everybody doesn't always capitalize on them. And it seemed like any time the Chrome defense didn't 100% understand what was going on, or they weren't all on the same page, the Cannons scored, and they made the most of that opportunity.
Yeah, so shout out Coach Holman, shout out to the Cannons getting that first dub of the season, and first dub since week one of 2022, because that's a huge step forward for them. Then we moved to Saturday. We had the game on ESPN, Chaos Archers Rivalry 1A. Chaos get the big dub. They did not skip a beat whatsoever, even with the boys from the Bandits coming back after, you know, championship parade and everything. They win 15-10, and that two-pointer at the end by Pat Resch makes it 15. And a lot of people online complaining about Pat Resch doing that, this, that, and the third. I spoke to one of our new listeners while I was walking to the Premier Zone on Saturday, and basically said, you know, Andy Towers is not afraid to do that whatsoever. We've seen him do it before. We've seen Chris Bates do it to Chaos before. Those are the types of moves that define a championship team versus just a team that's in the mix. A championship team is not going to be afraid to hold back and do something that is viewed as quote-unquote Bush League by scoring a late two-pointer to increase their score differential. Score differential is one of the top tiebreakers in the league, and that is evidenced now by Chaos being in first place because they have a plus two over the Archers in score differential. That two-pointer by Pat Resch is the difference between Chaos being in first place by more than, you know, one score, or being tied for first place due to score differential. So, I mean, that's a power move by AT for allowing his guys to go out there recognizing the moment. And you can't be mad at that. And Chaos played their asses off in this game. They made the Archers look neutralized in so many facets that we haven't seen so far this season with this new-look Archers team. Chaos played nasty. They played mean. They got in the faces of guys. They were talking their shit, and rightfully so. They played one hell of a game, and it was very impressive to watch.
I will not speak on the score differential stuff. I'm tired of having that conversation. Just watch the league and pay attention, and you'll know what's going on. If you want,
like, I get it. If you're a new fan, I get it. If you're new and you don't really know,
I mean, but like
I met, like he truly had no clue that that was like such an important tiebreaker because this was his first time ever watching the PLL. If you're new, I get being ignorant to the fact.
Kind of. It takes, you know, a few seconds to look up rules and that kind of thing. And I don't know. I just think it's a tired conversation. And in any sport, in my opinion, you should blow someone out. You play until the whistle. I don't care if you're winning or losing. You play until the last whistle, until the clock says all zeros. So if that means you're losing by 30, get better. Like, I don't know what else you want me to say.
No,
if you want to quit at the end of a game because you're already losing, then that's on you. Like, you shouldn't make the other people feel bad, or they shouldn't stop playing because you did. Like, that's awful. I mean, I'm tired of having that conversation in general, whether the score differential matters or not. Like, get over yourselves and grow a backbone. I realize how awful that sounds, but, like, I also don't care. So, yeah. But other than that, I love anytime Chaos wins. I mean, I was sitting up in the press box going, well, the Archers are making a fool of us. But, like, it's also not a big deal because we're a huge Chaos pod. So it's a win either way, because we knew the boys were going to do their thing. And that's the best part about Archer's chaos games now. They're simply just fun. They're simply just fun. Like, the Archers have always had an explosive offense that seems to do its thing. 10 goals is solid. And in a lot of games this season, 10 goals wins you the game. And they were slowed down, but they weren't stymied. Like, this Archers offense didn't look too different. They were just getting contested looks that were turning into saves rather than goals. But they were still getting their offense off and were still getting decent shots. They just weren't open hands as normal. And then some that were open hands were getting gobbled up. It's like, hey, it's Blaze Reardon. What do you expect? So they've just turned into a pure heavyweight battle at this point. They just go toe-to-toe with each other.
Yeah, and I mean, Chaos didn't even really have their full repertoire out there. Klutch and Chase were on the reserve roster this week, so they weren't playing. When they're in the mix, though.
Is there any drop-off? Truly.
No, I just think it's like when I'm trying to think of the comparison I'm trying to make here. Like Voltron. Like, you know how you get all the pieces together? Like, Chaos somehow have multiple versions of Voltron where they have different weapons that when this piece comes here, their offense looks like this. But then when they have this piece, their offense looks like this. And they don't skip a beat, but it makes their offense look cool and look different, and they can throw multiple different looks at you. And there's not many teams in the league that can do that.
Yeah, I just don't want, especially new listeners, just to think that the level of some of the guys who are out there for Chaos isn't as high as...
Oh, no, that's not what I'm trying to say those at all two. For everybody
yeah.
out there.
So it's just like keeping that level of understanding that they are a team that is just as good no matter who they put out. It just plays differently. And my thing, which I brought up to AT, and it seems like that is what they had designed this year, was a left and a right side with a two-man game. And then two ambidextrous players at X and then up top in the middle. It was hilarious to me that he pointed out that I had good use of the word ambidextrous after I said that to him. And then he goes on to say, like, yeah, we wanted to keep our same principles of using the two-man game on the outsides with our lefties and righties because that has worked so well. But it's been a killer for us to have a guy at X and up top that can kill you from both sides and can score, but can also feed. So if I was some of these other teams, I'd probably be looking at that as well, i.e. Redwoods. I think they could definitely go to that kind of system, especially with some of the players they picked up recently, Ryan Lee, Eli McLaughlin, Brian Tevlin, and then you still have Ryder, Charlie Bertrand, Rob, etc. You can leave Rob down at X. He can be your ambidextrous guy down there. Maybe you move Miles and Perk to a side. You put Charlie and Cole on a side. And then you leave Jules up top to attack from both ways. Maybe Brian Tevlin attacks from both ways. But, like, they got to find a way to kind of mix up their offense, in my opinion. They've kind of gone with the same, because, like, this doesn't look too different than what they had the previous years. They just added Westberg back to the middle and got a little bit more off-ball movement, but they're still running, like, the same system. And this offensive system hasn't necessarily worked for them. It's gotten them to some good places, but it hasn't gotten them to the gold standard that they're looking for. I would maybe try the approach that Chaos has gone with. They definitely have the pieces to supplement. They're not as box-like, but there's definitely some things they can do to make that system work for them.
Yeah. One last thing on Chaos. It's like anybody who slept on them, especially after the draft that they had, you're crazy. This team is disgusting. This team is championship caliber. We've seen them win a championship at this level. And if you thought Chaos was going to squander and struggle this year, you're out of your mind. They've already matched their 2022 win output. And sure, does some of that have to do with the way scheduling played out this year as opposed to last year? Absolutely. But it is very funny to me to the people that counted out Chaos and just the one team that you don't want to feed bulletin board material to, or I should say refrigerator material to, they're going to feast on that. So very funny to me that that was an occurrence this year, to say the least. But also the Archers, they'll be fine. I think this was just one of those look in the mirror type of moments where you can't let yourselves think your shit doesn't stink, because you can get beat any week in this league. And I think it also helps that this Chaos defense knows a lot of the tendencies of Mac O'Keefe and Jalen Rogers from their times on this Chaos roster and practicing against them. So I think that was also a benefit for Chaos getting this dub. So they'll be fine. The Archers are a playoff caliber team, a championship caliber team, and they'll be just fine coming out of the break. Last game of the weekend, it was Woods Whips, another installment of the rivalry that went just as every installment pretty much has. The Whips come out with a big blowout.
It's on Melissa's note. Were you able to load him in after what she sent?
Yeah, I'm going to
go. Deej got bombarded. don't worry, I muted you. The rivalry goes just how you think it would. Whips get their win, and the Wolves just still struggling to figure out how to beat this Whipsnakes team. Because I think the last time they beat them was 2021 Minnesota, and Matt Rambo was not playing in that game. So that's another concern. But the way that this Redwoods team just kind of came out so flat to start the game, they just looked like they had no clue what was coming at them. I mean, when you get goals scored on you by Colin Squires, Bryce Young, and you're down by 10 at halftime, that's a nice serving of what the hell's going on. And, you know, credit to the Woods. They fought back. They tried to make it a game. But, you know, when you also let two outlet passes from Kyle Bernlohr go to Matt Rambo looking like Jalen Hurts throwing to A.J. Brown, not once but twice, that's pretty demoralizing to say the least. And Redwood's got some work to do. They've got some work to do.
They got more than work. They got some work to do. But I don't know where the work is to be done. That is my thing. I guess maybe in the middle of the field.
Yep.
Because their defense is fine. But when they couldn't hold on to the ball and they couldn't get any transition going, they're playing a lot of defense. So they're going to give up some goals. Offense has looked a lot better than the past 2 years. So it's hard to say the offense is really the problem. Even in this game, they put up 11 goals. 11 goals in most games this year wins you the game.
Can I devil's advocacy you?
Sure.
The offense, I agree, has looked better. It's looked more fluid. And I'm not mad because the boy's getting his and he's in the early MVP discussion. This is now two out of your three games where the offense has kind of lived and died through Ryder Garnsey.
That I don't think is his fault.
I agree. I'm not saying it's his fault, but it is like, if you want to win consistently, you also have to make the offense more multidimensional and not rely on Ryder to like be the one guy producing at that clip.
But that's my thing. I don't think it's designed that way. I think it's designed for everybody to dodge hard, take the shot if it's there, or not move it to the open guy. The only person who's actually doing that right now is Ryder Garnsey, which is why he's the only one who's producing. So it's just a matter of getting everybody to do it. I don't know what the lack is or what the problem is, why no one wants to go that hard. But if guys just dodge like Ryder and either move the ball or shoot it, they're all going to produce that way. That's just my opinion on it from outside looking in. It just,
no, I agree with you. I'm just saying, like isn't that a little bit like concerning for the rest of the guys? It's like you want to see those other guys doing that, but right now it's just Ryder that is able to do it, and that's like long game. Like
I just think some of these,
you're going to get solved guys, in the playoffs if that's how your offense is going to go.
I just think some of these guys are in their own heads. Another person I think is doing okay with that is Rob. Like Rob, he's dodging pretty well. He's moving the ball. He's taking some smart shots when he gets them, and for the most part, they're going in. So he's not doing bad at that either. But it's like at this point, I think guys are saying they're just not as good as they used to be anymore. That they can't dodge that hard anymore. That their shots aren't really going in. The goalies are too good now. Like. They're in their like they're just in their own heads, and there's not much really anyone can do about that. They're kind of just in a slump, and they just got to see the ball go in a few times. Like maybe Miles starts to shoot more. We saw him like take a dodge in a shot. You know what I'm saying? And it went in. Like I don't know. I don't remember the last time Miles scored before that. I think that was his first goal of the year.
22.
That was his first goal of the year, and he didn't seem to have scored a lot of goals last year either. It seemed like he was passing the ball a lot. Like we haven't seen Serge pull up for a two since when?
He looks scared.
Like
and I mean that in the most respectful way to Perk, but like from a guy who is known for just ripping when he has the most minute amount of space. He's looking like Ben Simmons out there in Ohio. Like, he had multiple opportunities to go out and shoot the ball, find the back of the net. He had his angle that he usually wants and just pass it up. Like, I don't know. That's a massive concern for me with this offense is if Serge has the yips, that's a red flag and a half. Miles, I think, will figure it out. I think it's just him kind of getting adjusted to the way that this offense is running, and I think him scoring this weekend was big just for his confidence. But if Serge has the yips, like, that's a big fucking problem.
Or, in my opinion, you just sit him. Tell him figure it out. You got Cole Kurse, who's been dodging hard as well. I forgot to mention him. Cole Kurse has done fantastic at coming into the league and adopting the style of play, using his big body, going hard and taking shots, moving the ball otherwise. Charlie Bertrand is now healthy again, so he's back up and running. Maybe you take Perk out and you supplement him with a guy like Ryan Lee or Eli McLaughlin, guy who's a little bit faster, can handle the ball, and maybe take some speed dodges and moves around off ball a little bit to get some opportunities. Like, would we all love to see Perk out there? Yeah. But if he's not going to produce or at least try and be himself, you got to make changes.
Yeah, that's a huge thing that like I noticed throughout the entire game on Saturday was Perk just looks like a shell of himself, and that's no bueno whatsoever. So we'll see what happens coming out of the break, but. Gives these guys some time off if they're not playing in San Diego, and kind of lets them get back to rest and recovery, and hopefully things will work out for the better for everybody across the board. But Columbus was wild. Shout out to the fans that popped out, and I think they made a statement for. Them being a potential city.
Oh, yeah. That was my biggest thing. I was extremely proud of the atmosphere. I understand it was a smaller venue, and there couldn't quite be a ton of people there. But it sold out, which is great for the league and in that retrospect. But also, it was great for the energy. People were on top of people. There was just not enough space for the people that were there. They were loud. They were active, running around asking RJ and Paul 1,000 things. Somebody got Pac-Man to just grab a ball and give it to him. I was like, Don't he know he can't do that? Like,
he don't.
The PLL is for real about their balls. Like, they don't just give game balls away to anybody. And he just casually grabbed one and just handed it off like it was nothing. Like, the energy that was there was immaculate. It proved, once again, they showed out just like they did in 2019, that the Midwest loves lacrosse and that there needs to be a team here. I mean, I would just encourage anybody who's even relatively in the area, come out to a tournament in the area. Like, my team's going out to True Illinois Invitational in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and it's gigantic. It's going to have some, like, 100 teams there over, you know, eight divisions. And it's like, if you don't think the Midwest has good lacrosse or ton of lacrosse fans, you're crazy. You know, Minnesota's now into the game with lacrosse. Wisconsin's been around for a while. Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, all right there. You can even tag in, like, the eastern side of Pennsylvania, and that Kentucky and Iowa are also big into lacrosse. So I don't see why the team wouldn't come here. And after a weekend like last weekend in Columbus, it's a big, big booster and a big, like, motivator for the league to put seriously think about putting a team there.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun. Great venue, and shout out to the guests that we had on OTB Live, which the audio will be out on the pod feed sometime when I get back from Columbus. So you'll just have to wait on that. But Deej, let's talk a little San Diego, California. It's brought to you by our friends at Kenwood Beer, who are unfortunately not in San Diego, but they are in the Philadelphia area, and they just went through a whole new rebrand of their look, and it is absolutely immaculate. They've got the gold tops now on the cans, brand new logos, all new merch at kenwoodbeer.com. It is the official beer of Underground Sports Philadelphia, and you can go to kenwoodbeer.com, use the all-new improved Kenny Tracker, CUS Kenwood Beer on tap in the Philadelphia area. You can buy it at your local Philadelphia area liquor store, or if you're in eastern Pennsylvania, you can get it at your local Whole Foods. It's light body, light calories, plenty of flavor, the best light beer on the planet. You must be 21 or older to do so, and of course, please drink responsibly. Indeed, you can classify that at now as vintage, because that's the old Kenny can.
You're right. I got to get a new hat with the new Kenny can.
New hats, because that would be sweet. But they dropped the Kenny Golf Club, the Kenny Hockey Club, and the Kenny Softball League shirts, all new logo shirts. They look immaculate. So go to kenwoodbeer.com, check out all of the new Kenny merch. Let's talk some San Diego, Deej. My initial takeaway from everything, I tried watching U.S. versus Canada, and I'm looking at the score bug and everything. There was no game clock on it, and then they put the game clock on it. The camera angle was weird, and then I realized there was no shot clock, and then it put me to sleep.
Yeah, my biggest thing was the how bad the score bugs were. I'm cool with the lack of shot clock, and this is kind of gonna blow a lot of people's minds, but I'm thinking in terms of true growth for the sport. Okay, if you put a shot clock on some of these teams, they're not going to score. And not because, like, guys just can't – some of these guys can't handle as well as other teams right now. So putting a 52-second shot clock on them rushes them, which then therefore makes their mechanics even worse than they already are. So now teams are dropping the ball left and right, constantly turning it over and getting blown out. This just helps them be competitive a little bit. They're able to take their time, be patient, move the ball around, find the look they want so they can get quality shots and score some goals and feel like the tournament is somewhat of a success versus coming out, playing in a 50-second shot clock, 52-second shot clock, whatever, being rushed, turning it over a bunch and getting blown out because they aren't taking really any kind of shots throughout the game. It's a give and take with the shot clock thing. My biggest thing is the stall warning. If you're not going to do a shot clock, yes, do the stall warning, but make the attack box like college regulation size, so that they can't have a quarter of the field to just move around in and throw the ball around and keep it away from the other team. Like, there's too much space. There's no opportunity for them to kind of push them out and really give some pressure where they're close to the box line and they step out and then they get a turnover. Going all the way to the sideline is just too far. But like Canada, America, it's fine. The way it's set up, it's fine. They're okay. They're still going to move the ball relatively fast. They're still going to try and get into their offense kind of quick and get some shots off. They're not going to go too slow, but a lot of people have to get into an ebb and flow kind of relationship with the world championships or the world games to understand that these are meant to grow the game and give more countries a chance to participate and get into the game and love the game. So it's going to look clunky. It's not going to be the best product all the time, but it's about spreading the true meaning of the game, love and medicine. You do it because you love the sport and it makes you feel better. It makes others feel better. It's just a fun, loving, encompassing game. So just let the world championships and the world games be that. And then look to, you know, maybe the Olympics is where it becomes more competitive on a international level. But then we just look to NOL, PLL, and NCAA ball as true lacrosse, where we can be a little more stickler-like and want certain rules and things, because it is about putting the absolute best product out at that point.
I saw a bunch of people say this, and I was thinking this. I just didn't tweet it because we're tired, exhausted, eyeballs hurt. TomahawkShades.com, code USP, 25% off. Get your blue lights. Am I wrong for saying that this format or this tournament should be sixes?
Yes. Because that's why the World Games and the Olympics are sixes. Like, World Lacrosse Championships will never be sixes. They won't be, ever. Ever.
It's so... And it's not even, like, the clunking. It's just slow.
Well, that's... It's supposed to be the game at its purest. And I think that's why the rules are kind of are the way they are. Because it's just lacrosse at its purest, what it is, you know, chase after it. You get it. If you have it, you have it. Move it around, dodge, you get beat up, offsides. It's just raw. And I think that's the only reason the championships will forever stay 10. Because it's just the raw game.
Yeah, this is a tournament that is just a let me check the box score. For me, at least. It's one of those things that I'll see what the results were. Look at some highlights. But it was just very tough to watch. And part of that's probably due in part to I am running on sicko mode exhaustion hours. But also, we've talked about this a ton. Please cater to the East Coast. The 10 o'clock start times were brutal.
I would love to say that. But getting something going, it wouldn't be a prime time event if it was at 4 o'clock. Because what I think is they still want their bigger games to be like to get some attendance. So I think they're trying to get some of the locals at some of these bigger games. Canada USA is going to have to be a primetime West game, which is going to be 7 o'clock out there, which is 10 o'clock here. And it's better than the Israel times from last year.
I didn't even know
or what was or going on in the Israel, last time, so. The last time they were there, or in 2018, I think it was.
Yeah, we were. I wasn't even following the sport then, so.
I was, and it was brutal. We were up in the middle of the night trying to watch games, literal middle of the night trying to watch games. Like, it was awful. But it was like, what can we do? That's like what works best for their time frame. So it's kind of just one of those things, especially with World, somebody's always going to be upset. Somebody's always going to be upset.
I'll forever because be upset when we're not being.
That's just because you're just a little spoiled.
I'm old. I know. I'm old, and I need good start time so I can stay the fuck awake. That's just not what I'm getting at.
Listen, man, we got ESPN Plus, so you can go back and watch whenever you want.
Yeah, but then when I see a result, there, know what happened. Watching a movie and knowing the end. That's like going and watching Endgame and knowing Tony Stark was ready to snap.
I'm calling you out for not being a true lacrosse junkie. That's all. That's really what
I was a junkie.
I know. I'm just like,
I'm not a junkie. There's a difference.
I'm just letting you know. I'm a junkie.
I never claimed to be one.
I'm just making sure.
That was never in my bag.
Like, that's just a difference between me and you. Like, I'll watch a game even never in my bag, knowing the result.
That's any sport though. If I see the result, I'm like, ah. It ruins
any other sport.
Spoiler.
Any other sport, I'm not watching. But like lacrosse, sometimes I want to know how it happened. Like, I can know the score, but I want to see how it happened. Especially if it's like a one goal game. Like, did they come back? Was it tight back and forth? Like, what happened? I gotta know.
That's what highlights are for.
No, highlights don't tell the full story for real. Gagging.
Yeah, you do highlights plus box score. Equals
nah, bro.
That's a wrap for me.
That's
literally like logging onto Twitter the day LeSean McCoy spoiled Endgame.
I'm screaming.
Can't do it. It's a detractor for the boys.
You just don't like lacrosse that much, man. It's okay.
That's false. You can't say that.
I can't.
Can't say that.
Yeah, real fans gonna watch the game anyway.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm not a junkie.
You just ain't a real one. You just ain't a real one.
Oh, I'm a real fan. I'm just not a junkie.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm not pulling up like SpongeBob when he's all disheveled watching 3 a.m. lacrosse games.
Well, we don't have 3 a.m. lacrosse games. The latest a game's gonna end is like 12:30.
That would be thrown into the bag of a junkie, though.
Sure. I mean, I'll be up till 12:30 watching games. I don't mind. That's not a problem with me.
Just wait. You're slowly but surely catching up to my age.
Oh, I know. I still want to be like you when I grow up.
See me in almost 4 months, and it's going to be a real different story.
And it's not an immediate turnover like that, bro. Relax.
Oh, the internal clock begs to differ.
It is not an immediate turnover.
My internal clock is plummeting just like that submarine was to the bottom of the ocean.
Chill. We are not doing that. We're not. I'm trying to be a man of God.
Pause. Time out.
I'm just saying, bro. I've been doing good. Not cracking jokes.
I know you're not simping for some billionaires.
No, bro. I'm just not trying to make jokes of a tragedy, man.
Bro, the ocean heard everybody say eat the rich and took it personally.
Hey, listen. You know how afraid I am of the ocean.
See, if they would have just built this thing with a GPS, they would have been able to find them because there's only one address in the ocean, and it's 42 Wallaby Way, Sydney.
That wasn't even in the ocean. You gotta chill, bro. I was doing so good at not laughing or talking, cracking jokes about these people. All right, I'm
you
trying
see
to
the
make
Simpsons
change.
Predicted this?
Man, they ain't predict nothing. They be showing us. They like to talk about it before they do it. The world is messed up. No, you about to pull out the conspiracy theorist out of me. You got to chill.
Well, I'm fully convinced that the creators and any higher up from The Simpsons are time travelers.
Man, they ain't no time travelers. They just know because the government be doing stuff. And then they just tell them.
Oh, like, this video has been demonetized before we get monetized by YouTube.
See? I'm trying to tell you, bro.
I'm just saying, The Simpsons creators, the amount of things that they have predicted that are the most minute, minuscule things.
Because they're not predictions.
They're time travelers, I know.
They're not
predictions. That's what I'm trying to say.
No, they're not time travelers.
They travel forward.
They're not time
travelers. That's how we got Futurama.
You know how, like, man, bro, they make movies and TV shows about all the messed up things that are happening in the world. And it's not always after. It's because they already know they're going to happen. They just like to tell you and throw it in your face, and then there's nothing you can do to stop it either. I'm trying to tell you, The Simpsons know ahead of time. It ain't prediction. They know.
Yeah, because they traveled it forward in time.
Straight from the word of the government. The government is telling them. Because think about it, bro. If they were really time travelers and the government didn't want any of this to be out, they would have been shut them down and stopped that.
I never said they weren't in cahoots. I'm just saying they're time travelers.
Man, they ain't time traveling. The government just telling them. What? And if you think time travel was real, wouldn't you think somebody else would have been figured it out by now?
No, because
they're the only people that figured out time travel.
Yeah, it would not shock.
That don't seem suspicious to you?
Nope.
Man, you sound crazy. If somebody had figured out time travel, I think some other scientists would have figured it out by then too.
Hey,
they ain't the only smart people in the world. They're not.
There's a lot of questionable people. See the five dead ones in this vessel submarine. Did you see the contract they had to sign?
Have you heard the latest? I did not, but have you heard
the contract
latest?
Mentioned death three times. And they still said, where do I sign?
Well, have you heard the latest theory that they're not actually on the submarine? And that they're all faking their deaths to get away from
criminals. Man, they gotta be stopped.
Criminal charges?
Yeah, they're criminals because they're billionaires. That was the first clue. If you wanted to get them, you should have just looked up their net worth. Get a fucking group of people.
I mean, they could possibly be faking their deaths, bro.
Did you see the meme of when they heard the banging or whatever? And somebody photoshopped orcas banging on pots and pans.
No.
It's incredible content.
Just amazing.
So we still have what, another week of World Lacrosse Men's Championship. Did I say it right, people? The people yelling at me watching this? Did I say it right? Are you fucking happy?
Yeah, I'm looking at the full schedule. And Saturday, July 1st is the bronze medal game. So I would assume either later that day is the gold or the next day.
True.
So,
also seems like Jake Withers might not be playing in the PLL this year.
I don't think so. Actually, I believe he is playing
in Peterborough.
Yes. But I mean, hey, I don't think James Riley's done that bad.
For the firemen. That's why he's possibly not playing because he's in firefighter school.
Speaking of the schedule for today, as you're listening to this, Uganda and Japan will have already played. Italy and Mexico have already played, and so will Korea, Republic, and Ireland. But we'll probably be able to get you
tuned in with Peru and Netherlands, Poland and Germany, Philippines and Israel, who all kick off at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Face off, 4 p.m. Eastern time. I don't want to get roasted. Puerto Rico, Sweden.
We don't kick the ball, DJ. What the fuck are you talking about?
Holding the Shawnee in England. And then Switzerland and Jamaica all face off at 7 Eastern. Denmark, France, Austria, Scotland, Australia, and the good old hoorah, United States of America all face off at 10 p.m. today.
God damn it.
I'm going to highlight some of the other games throughout the weekend. Japan and Wales should be interesting because that will probably be for first place in their pool. Japan's gotten off to a great start, and Wales has kind of won their pool the last few times. Puerto Rico has been fun to watch with Russell Melendez and a few other guys they have. Australia and Canada, that's just a game of interest because of the pool being in with the United States. America plays Haudenosaunee tomorrow at 10 p.m. Israel and Puerto Rico will be fun to watch. I think U.S. will steamroll England. Canada and Haudenosaunee play Sunday at 10 p.m., so that will be fun.
Hey, don't sleep on Christian Scarpello and them England boys. You see that goal he scored?
Yeah. So, yeah, those are kind of just the big ones for the American pool. But it's just been exciting to see kind of pro players bouncing around, college guys moving around and representing some different countries and getting some solid play all around the championships.
Yeah, for sure. So we still got another week or so of the World Lacrosse Men's Championship. Say that 20,000 times fast. Is there any transfer portal updates? Because I'm pretty sure the portal closed, if I'm not mistaken. Or is it still
Portal
open?
Jones is about to let you know.
And it's brought to you by our friends at Tomahawk Shades. Go to TomahawkShades.com. Use code USP for 25% off your order of sunglasses, blue light glasses, prescription lenses, you name it, they got it. TomahawkShades.com. Code USP for 25% off your order.
So the 45-day transfer portal window was opened on May 8th. It closed just 2 days ago, Wednesday on the 21st. But that just means that those names had to be submitted by then in order to not have to sit for a year. So someone can still enter the transfer portal. They'll just have to sit. And this window does not apply to prospective grad students. So all grad students, their window, I would assume, is a little bit, probably a lot longer, because it really depends on entrance into programs and that kind of thing. So I wouldn't be too amped to pay too much attention to that deadline. Most guys that were going to transfer are in already. And we are going to get right into this. I love that Inside Lacrosse has dropped new guys that have transferred. They are in italics, so that's it made it easy to pick out the new guys.
Big font.
I am. It makes things easy, man. Play around with fonts, and it makes reading a lot more fun. But Bryant picking up grad midfielder from St. Bonaventure, Brady Widgebrandt, Connor Beals, faceoff guy from Mount St. Mary's. Grad guy will be going to Drexel. Campbell Posen, a D-mid from Christopher Newport, will be a grad transfer to High Point. Derek Marsilio, a midfielder from Vermont, will be joining the long list of Jacksonville incoming transfers. Brandon Aviles, D-mid from Syracuse, has pledged to John Hopkins, who also got Chase Erland not too long ago as well. They have one of the better transfer classes so far. They have Aviles, Oren Galinas from Ohio State, Chase Erland from Cornell, and Jacob Stobner from Princeton.
two goalies, a D mid and a D guy. So really trying to get that defense together, which was a low point for them this past season. Griffin King, a midfielder from Brown, and Colin Sharkey, a D mid from Vermont, both grad students going to Maryland. Justin Tiernan, attack from Lehigh, the biggest, the most recent pickup for Michigan. Michigan has turned into transfer portal U, pretty much outside of Jacksonville. Those two are kind of fighting for it on a regular. Bo Peterson, Cathal Roberts, and Christian Ronda all coming from Princeton, D mid, LSM, and mid. And then Bucknell, Andrew Stansel, D guy from Bucknell, and then Lee Tiernan from Lehigh. They're all grad students coming to Michigan for another year. Matt Dolliff going to Rutgers, or Matt Dolliff, midfielder from Rutgers, going to Monmouth. He'll be joining attackman from Marquette, Connor Gorman. Zach Antonio is a D guy from Fairfield. He'll be making his way into the Midwest, playing at Ohio State. Luke Jaber, an attackman from Bentley, will be doing grad school at Providence. Mason Edwards, D-mid from UMBC, will be doing grad work at Rutgers. Torin Eccleston, attackman from national championship winning D2 Lenore Ryan, will be doing grad ball at St. Joe's. So you may be able to stop in and get a little bit on him. Sam Inglis from Princeton making his way to Syracuse is huge. They're also getting Mason Kine, faceoff guy from Tufts, grad student. Zach Puckhaber, a D guy from Gettysburg, will be a grad student there. And Jake Titus, a D mid from Union, will be a grad student at Syracuse as well. Three huge D3 pickups there for Syracuse. And I think Mason Kine will boost their faceoff unit a ton. Looking around, and that is that's it for incoming guys. Gonna look and see if there's still some like big names out in the transfer portal that haven't been claimed yet. Colgate Bryce Ferguson is new. He's a midfielder, a grad guy. He's new to the list. Ben Scandone, a midfielder from Drexel, is new to the list. Gordon Ogden, LSM, and Colin Olson, midfielder. Olson's already going to Florida Tech from Jacksonville, and Ogden is LSM waiting for somewhere else, leaving Jacksonville. John Hopkins has Brian Wong, an attackman, on his way out.
I have breaking news from about an hour and a half ago.
Oh.
This comes from Joe Holden from CBS3, right in the backyard, Philadelphia. Cabrini University will soon shut its doors as an independent institution. As they are going to be purchased by Villanova, ceasing operations in the 2023-2024 season.
Oh, wow. Now I'm wondering, will Cabrini stay as a D3 program?
I doubt it. And this makes all the more sense why the news yesterday came out that Cabrini's coach was leaving to go coach at a high school.
Yowza. Back to the portal. Josh Zawada is probably the biggest name left on the list. Like I mentioned in the past, he's most likely waiting on what's going to happen with Michigan acceptance into his program or not, on where he goes. And I do have a very strong belief that he stays in the maize and blue if he gets accepted into his program. TJ Gravante and Matt Sardo, an attack in midi, respectively, from Mount St. Mary's, new to the portal. Anthony Gobriel, faceoff guy from Navy, new to the portal. Quentin O'Connell, midi, new to the portal, grad guy, transferring out of North Carolina to Northwestern to play football. Second time we've seen a lacrosse guy go to Northwestern to play a different sport. We saw Kent Spetzer play some basketball there for a year before trying to do his thing in the NBA. He's still running around that circuit. JT Rozelle, some grad guy from North Carolina, new to the portal. Drew Blanchard, faceoff guy from Ohio State, new to the portal. And Kyle Gonsirovic. I definitely said that wrong. I'm going to figure out how to say his name. I like that. LSM transferring out of Syracuse, newer to the list. Jonathan Bender, midfielder. And Devin Rasmus, midfielder. Out of Townsend, newer to the list. Rasmus is already headed to Tampa. Davis Burleson, attack from UMBC, already headed to Trinity. He's joined by Ricky Fedorchak. Ricky Fedorchak. LSM and D guy grad. He's going to Florida Tech. Drew Wasserman, attackman out of Utah, is on the list. And that wraps it up for big name guys headed out or new guys on their way out. Portal Jones, back to the Cribbo.
Yeah, Cabrini's just like done on the campus. Going to be used as Villanova's law school.
Wow. I want to know how much they sold out for.
Well, apparently Cabrini, as an institution, had been operating at a loss since the 2012-2013 academic year. And then post-Pandy Wandy, it's gotten way worse. So.
Wow.
And Cabrini's only about 2 miles down the road from Villanova. T's and P's.
That's,
2019
that's crazy.
Champions.
That's crazy.
That's all we got for you guys this week. Make sure you're following us at OTB Laxpod, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.com/UndergroundSportsPHI. You can follow Deej on Twitter at @SES_NextGreat. Follow me at KBIZZL311. Subscribe to the podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave those 5-star reviews. Help us continue to grow. Help more people find the show. I do have to say, Deej, when I was working the conference I was working at, I was talking with one of the other admin staff people about lacrosse, and in about a 30-minute period of me selling him on the sport, I woke up the next morning, walk into our office, and he said, "Yo, I bought a $295 Trevor Baptiste Wings jersey." It was like one of the ones that they only made specifically, I think, for like season ticket holders, and they only made like 75 of them. He's sold.
I love that.
He's
I love
sold.
That. Man's just like, we're here. Lacrosse is the new sport.
It was hilarious. So yeah, go subscribe. And of course, subscribe to the Underground Sports Philadelphia YouTube channel, youtube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia. That's where you get full video episodes of this show, every show on our network, and a whole bunch more of original video content, all on our YouTube. Go subscribe, trying to get to 600 subscribers, hopefully by the end of the month. Don't know if that'll happen, but if you step up, we can make it happen. Go subscribe and go get your merch, phiapparel.co, code underground for 10% on any and all orders. And this has been episode number 280 of the allegedly award-nominated, honorably mentioned, number 9 NCAA ranked, and of course viewable on YouTube, Outside the Box Podcast, the official lacrosse podcast on the Underground Sports Philadelphia Podcast Network. For Deej, I'm KB. Till next time, we're getting the heck up out of here. Peace.
Peace.
And that's Outside the Box.